The snows came down over a wintry Berlin. The Spree had frozen over, and the wooden boats that lined its muddy banks creaked as they were compressed by the forces of winter. The streets were empty of the citizens, but windows across the Brandenburg capital were lit warmly with flickering candles and the glow of fires. Over the cobbled streets of the Schlossplatz lay a blanket of crisp white snow that only the hoofs of horses and wheels of carriages had bothered to disturb in the late hours. Winds whistled through the arches of colonnades and stirred those without homes in their slumber. For all intents and purposes, it was a quiet Berlin night. Behind the windows that glinted in the moonlight set within the high Renaissance walls of the Schloss, all was equally quiet. The kitchens lay empty of their staff, no cooks needed in the hours when no earthly being should be awake. The great rooms that entertained guests at feasts, that echoed with the songs and poems of bards and jesters, lay set and solemnly still. Even the horses in the stables snoozed into the night. But as the candles within the windows of the city slowly burnt away or were blown out, returning the city to the depths of a winter night, a chill deep and icy found its way through the great corridors, around the ankles of antiques and beneath the doors of the palace. For most, that chill fell on merely turned within their sleep, pulling the blankets closer, but not waking. In the grandest of rooms, whose walls were bedecked with tapestries depicting scenes of the hunt, of man and beast caught forever in an eternal play, there lay a great bed. Carved of the greatest oaks of Brandenburg, its posts rose high within the vaulted room, from which a canopy of the finest material hung. Within the bed, there slept a man. A large man whose belly rose high within the sheets and whose head was depressed low within the pillow. His face white from winter, had eyes deep set, shut and close together, frowned over by thick, dark eyebrows that twitched as he slept, and surrounding his mouth that he so often liked to stuff full was a small beard of black hair. In the night, he was restless. Whilst others dreamed deep, he kicked his body about the bed. Beads of perspiration ran down his furrowed brow as he moaned with guttural sounds that betrayed his subconscious. She watched him sleep. She felt no point in disturbing his mind's own self-torture. There was certainly a satisfaction to watching him squirm as he slumbered. Across the room, she moved without a sound, the chill wind lapping from her waxen-like legs. To the pole she moved, watching as the fat man before her became more agitated with every step that brought her closer to him. Still, his eyes did not open, but hers remained transfixed in a stare that cut the night as if it were the blade of a knife. It was a gaze that came from eyes that burned with a merry anger. The owner showed the structure of beauty stolen by hunger. The brow of a cloth cap hung over a face sunken and skeletal. Her hands were bony, the rings that adorned many of her fingers seemingly floating. The rest of this lady, who made her visit in the night, was not visible, for it was hidden beneath the antiquated designs of the last century. Silently, and without making even the slightest impression upon the covers, she sat upon the end of the bed. His eyes shot open and caught the piercing gaze of the woman. His heart stopped just for a moment as he felt the horror burn within him, only to be washed over by the icy fear that came after. He scrambled within the sheets, pushing his feet against the bedding. He pushed himself to the top of the bed, as far as he could manage to get away from the lady who had appeared in his chamber in the middle of the night. "Is it you?" his voice barked, trembling with fear, eyes wide and able to break the gaze of the woman. "You that stole my grandfather from this earth?" stole your grandfather, her voice cackled. But my dear Prince Elector, he stole much more from me. Slowly, her body began to float toward the Prince Elector in the bed. The covers did not move, nor did her gaze as she drew ever closer. The air grew thick with the chill. The perspiration upon the fat Prince Elector's face stopped running. His head pushed hard against the backboard of the bed as the woman's ghostly face approached. Johann Sigismund, Prince Elector of Brandenburg, of House Hohenzollern, her voice whispered as she approached. It is time for my revenge.
Please, no,
he cried. He begged.
What was done to you was wrong,
he squealed. What was done to me is done. Now it is what I am going to do to you. With immediate speed, her body flung forward through the air. Still as she flew, her gaze met the Prince Elector's and collided. With a start, the Prince Elector jumped from the bed and fell to the floor, the woman's body having passed through his own. He scrambled in his linen nightgown and pushed his heavy girth up from the floor with all his strength that he had remaining, his bare feet pushing into the wooden boards. Without a glance back, he bound for the door that remained still locked. Turning the key and throwing it open, he ran with all the speed that he could muster. She watched with great satisfaction. Turning on the bed that she could not feel, she feigned relaxation, closing her eyes and taking comfort in her actions for a brief moment, before rising effortlessly from the bed to stand upon the floor. To the window she glided, recomposing herself. She widened her gaze once more and watched. Out through the palace doors he fled, his feet bare, running in the snow, but his mind feeling no cold, only fear. Across the Schlossplatz he ran blind. There was a sudden yell.
Get out of the way!
A voice from atop a carriage. A horse blew a sound of annoyance and started. He fell to the ground.
Bloody idiot!
The carriage driver shouted down to the Prince Elector that was scurrying upon his arse in the snow. Crashing into a horse had snapped him back to reality. He felt almost like laughing to himself. Perhaps he had slumbered in a dreamlike state to this position. But as he picked himself up from the sodden stone ground, he caught glance of the window to his chamber, and his heart stopped briefly once again. The fear returned with the gaze that he had fallen into once more. Panicked, he fled on foot once again. His heart pumped heavily within his ears. He could feel every pulse, and with every pulse his ears felt as if they were likely to explode. Over the Langebrücke, he moved as swiftly as he could. His stomach ached with a pain he had not felt before. Turning hastily, he ran the short distance along the riverbank on the far side from his palace, and at a large oak door he began beating with his fist. Footsteps could be heard on the other side. He stole a glance. Through the air she flew, right at him once again. With terror he fell back as the door opened and the lady vanished. Oh my, Excellency, came an old voice from above him. Freytag, take me into the warmth of your home.
You might have sent a servant, Your Excellency. I would have come to you.
Hurry, Freytag, please, hurry.
Then may I help you? The Elector said nothing to his valet, who bent his body to help the large girth of the Elector from the floor, not wishing to physically have to ask for help. I'll make the fire in my chamber and get you warm once again. It is too cold a night to be outdressed in so little.
Please, just hurry, Freytag.
To the chamber of Anton Freytag, the Elector's valet and the Elector himself moved. The Elector pale and shivering. Freytag made the fire and soon the warmth of its embers began to fill the room.
Stay in the room, Freytag. I saw her.
Saw whom, my lord?
Anna.
You saw her, did you? Freytag puzzled.
Did you not? When you opened the door for me, she flew with haste and pierced my body.
I cannot say that I did. But you do mean Anna Sido.
I do, Freytag. Alas, I do.
The woman who stole my grandfather.
I mean not to question. But your grandfather was a man of advanced years. 71, if I remember. You, my lord, are young at 47.
I know.
But she appeared before him on his last night as she has appeared before me this evening. I should not worry, my lord. You are no longer in the Schloss, but in the safety of my home, that I have filled with warmth. I will do as you ask and stay in the room. Freytag watched his master with bemusement. Johann Sigismund, scared by an apparition, the great man who managed to bring Brandenburg and Prussia together, was trembling in his valet's bed. Freytag stayed awake and watched as the fear depleted the energy of the Elector, and he fell into a restless slumber. But as the hours ticked by, Freytag's own eyes grew heavy, and he fell into sleep. When the sun of the new day rose over the wintry cityscape of Berlin, only small embers burnt in the grate of the fire. A whistle of a wind blew through the crack in a window and snapped Freytag from where he slumbered upon the floor. Remembering the previous night with a start, he rose. There, still within the bed, lay the Prince Elector. Freytag approached. With shock resting upon the gaunt face, wide-eyed and pale, Freytag realized that it was not only the fire that was cold. For in the night, the fear of the Elector had been realized. He had been stolen from this world by Anna Zidow.
Achtung, Achtung. Hier ist die Sendestelle im Wochenau. Meine Damen und Herren.
Welcome to the Arxon History Podcast, presented by Simon J. James and produced by the BerlinTourGuide.com. This week, the haunting of House Hohenzollern.
Prince Elector Johann Sigismund of Brandenburg and Duke of Prussia, sometimes pointlessly anglicized to John Sigismund, died on the 23rd of December 1619 in the house of his valet, Anton Freytag, after witnessing Anna Zidow present herself to him. Anna was born sometime in the year 1525, and her name is mentioned in texts dating as early as 1568, and perhaps earlier. Born to parents Andreas Zidow and Gertraud Schneiderwind, of her early life little is known. However, she would, at the age of 24, somehow meet Elector of Brandenburg, Joachim II. Joachim II was a powerful man, tall and broad. So powerful was he that he had taken on the cognomen of Hector, after the great hero of Troy, Hector. Joachim had been born in Köln, what is partly museum, island, and the Fischer Insel in today's Berlin. His early life was dominated by the policies of his father in religion, as tensions were brewing over the sale of indulgences to raise money, and Martin Luther was lecturing in Brandenburg's neighbor, Saxony. In 1524, Joachim would marry Magdalena of Saxony, who came from high royal European stock, and a year after their marriage, Johann Georg would be born. Their marriage lasted for less than 10 years before Magdalena tragically died in 1534. A year after this, Joachim would remarry, this time to the daughter of the Polish king, Sigismund I, the Old. The daughter was Hedwig. It was in the same year that he remarried that his father, the Prince Elector, died, and Joachim was elevated to the seat of the Elector. His reign was one of finding balance between the new religious order in Europe, the Protestant movement, and the old, the Catholics. However, after bearing 16 children to the Kurfürst, fate struck Hedwig. Whilst riding on a hunt on the Elector's estate in Grimnitz, Hedwig had an accident. She was badly injured in the abdomen. Brought back to her home of the Elector, she was left under the care of doctors to recover, but as time passed, the reality of the seriousness of her injuries became obvious to her and those around her. Such damage had been caused in the accident that she became practically confined to her bed. When she tried to walk, there was excruciating pain. When helped onto a horse, she would wince with hurt and ask to be brought back down, and, although she had already bore 16 children, she was unable to produce any more for the Kurfürst. The Elector, the Kurfürst, soon found solace in the company of others. Joachim began to take concubines into the Schloss, much to the disgust of his eldest son, Johann Georg, who opted to escape the public shows of betrayal towards the stepmother he had known for so long and join with a regiment of the Brandenburg army instead. It was in these musings with other women that Joachim came to meet Anna, who was herself already married to the master gun founder, Michael Dietrich of Schorfheide, a forested area to the north of Berlin, where Kaiser Wilhelm II would eventually have, many centuries later, a hunting lodge. It became a strange existence, two lives of duality. Anna Zidow maintained her marriage with the gun founder Dietrich, to which she had bore three children, and Joachim remained married to Hedwig. However, Anna, shortly after her relationship with Joachim began, took residence in the hunting lodge that Joachim had built in the Grunewald forest near Berlin, which still stands today as the Jagdschloss Grunewald. By placing or allowing Anna to live in the hunting lodge, Joachim was not trying to hide the relationship, rather the opposite. Whilst Anna could have remained hidden amongst the trees, Joachim decided, alternatively, to begin parading his mistress, walking with her upon his arm through the forests and into villages, even having her attend public meetings at his side. When Joachim took Anna on a hunt around the small town of Bielitz, famous today for its asparagus, the locals began to question the morality of their leader, asking questions. "Is our mist gracious, lord, wife's unjust?" asked those who saw the broad-shouldered leader riding with a mistress who soon became known as the founderer after her husband's profession. Others spoke, "Are these just cattle? How is he thus and we are not?" They questioned the morality of their leader. Soon, Anna became known as the royal cow. When these words eventually made it, in their exaggerated form, as they were passed from mouth to mouth to Johann Georg, his rage against his father and the royal cow only grew. Joachim began to feel the wrath of his eldest son and worried over his second family. In 1561, the year that Anna's husband died, he had Johann Georg promise to look after Anna upon his death and to ensure his children by her were well looked after. But still Joachim, a Renaissance man believing himself above morality that his subjects had to follow, flaunted his mistress. A year after the promise was made, Joachim made his son reaffirm it. Yet there seemed little to stop Joachim's womanizing, not morality or his progression into old age. In 1570, during the winter, as snow lay over all of Joachim's Brandenburg domain, Joachim arranged for what was described as a princely amusement, by which he and court society embarked upon sledges from the palace in Berlin, along the road built on wooden piles into the marshy ground that would gain the name Kurfürstendamm later, to the west, leaving the road, the sleighs then charged through the forest to the city of Spandau dominated by its fortress. Here the Prince Elector and his court chased after the women and girls of Spandau, inviting them into their sleighs and taking them back to their own homes. For Joachim, though, this sleigh joyride was to be one of his last adventures. As winter still hung over Brandenburg, in January of the next year, he suddenly died. With his death, Johann Georg was called upon to succeed his father, and he wasted little time dispensing with the cows who'd taken residency within the royal homes. Whilst most of the consorts were thrown out for the woman who had been the favourite of his father, despite the promises made to his father, he carried a special rage. Immediately upon hearing the news of his father's death, he put to action his plans of revenge. He ordered the soldiers now under his command to find and arrest the woman, Anna Zidow, to take her and throw her into the citadel. In the great red brick citadel of Spandau, she was caged. The Juliusturm became her home, an almost windowless tower that rises 44 meters over its surroundings, with walls over 3 meters thick. She was stolen from her children, who were not allowed to visit. Her food was rationed and little. In the winters, she shivered and cold. In the summers, little changed with the depth of the walls. The early days of weeping in the dark and starving soon passed into weeks, months, and years. Her resolve to withstand the solitary cruelty faded, and with it, her health. 4 years passed, and in 1575, Anna Sydow died. With Anna's death, Johann Georg allowed the memory of the mistress of his father to wither and die with her. Satisfied that he had got his revenge on behalf of his stepmother and family, whom his father, he felt, had so illy treated with his flings. That was until the first day of the new year, in 1598. As Johann Georg rested in the apartments of the Schloss in Köln, Anna made her first post-mortem appearance. Gliding to the rooms of the Elector, she gave the 72-year-old ruler a start. The Elector was found quivering in the corner by his staff. Despite his doctor's best efforts, there seemed no cure for the ailment that the Elector seemed to have contracted. Quivering and feverish, he remained in his bed until on the evening of the 8th of January, he fell from consciousness, never to recover. In her years within the Julius term, she, in her mutterings, had decried vengeance upon Johann Georg for her imprisonment, but she cried a deeper revenge on his descendants for his stealing of her children from her. With the death of Johann Sigismund, almost 21 years later, attributed to the witnessing of the apparition of Anna Sydow in white, the haunting of the Hohenzollern dynasty became a common knowledge and a common fear within the descendants. It was a further 21 years before she was known to strike again. This time in 1649, she stole Wilhelm Heinrich, the firstborn son of the Elector Friedrich Wilhelm, just a year into the child's life. In 1660, the mother of Friedrich Wilhelm reported to her staff that she had seen a ghost of a white lady in her palace in which she resided in Thuringen. By the morning of the day after, the 26th of April 1660, she also had passed. In the Elector Friedrich Wilhelm, commonly known as the Great Elector, Anna Sydow had found a special haunt. Perhaps it was because this man had become known as the Great Elector. At the grand staircase of the Berlin Schloss, she appeared on the top step before the confidant of the Great Elector, Conrad von Bergsdorf. Von Bergsdorf, upon realizing the identity of the apparition before him, stared the white lady in the eye and screamed with all his might, so that his voice echoed amongst the corridors and rooms of the Schloss. "You sacramental whore! Have you not drunk enough royal blood? Do you want more?" In an instant, Conrad von Bergsdorf found her hand upon his collar. With an effortless heave, his body suddenly was thrown through the air and down the staircase of the Schloss. Not longer after she appeared, laughing and smiling, before Sophia Dorothea, the second wife of the Great Elector. The date was the 28th of April, 1688. The day after, the Great Elector was dead. In 1701, Berlin became the capital of the Kingdom of Prussia. The Elector was elevated to king, and a redesign was proposed for the Berlin Palace. In the works undertaken to turn the Renaissance palace into one fit for a new kingdom, the old palace was torn down, its foundations dug up, and during the course of this excavation, a skeleton was found. Quickly, people began to speculate that it was the skeleton of the woman that had haunted the old palace's halls, Anna Sydow. A funeral was arranged and a proper burial to follow. The hope that if it was the skeleton, and if it was properly laid to rest, then the spirit of the deceased would also come to rest. However, it seemed that Conrad von Bergsdorf was right. A simple burial could not put an end to Anna's bloodthirst. She, within 113 years of her own death, had claimed at least 5 victims, and she certainly was not finished. It was said that in 1740 she made the journey to the city palace in Potsdam, where King Friedrich Wilhelm I resided, bound to a wheelchair, suffering from gout. At the age of just 51, he suddenly suffered heart failure and died. The death of Friedrich Wilhelm I would be the last unexplained for quite some time. Maybe she took pity on his son Friedrich II, the great king of Prussia, who knew what it was like to have someone they loved stolen from them. In this case, it was by his own father. Maybe his successor, Friedrich Wilhelm II, was not prominent enough, but it was 100 years before she was known to appear again, this time to Friedrich Wilhelm III, the lover of peace who was drawn into war by Napoleon's hand and had managed to salvage Prussia and defeat Napoleon. He who reigned for 43 years oversaw Berlin's expansion as a center of learning and the transition into the beginning stages of industrialization. On the 1st of June 1840, in the Berlin Palace, a guard was found slumped upon the floor before the door to the king's chambers. Those who found him shook him from what was perceived to be a slumber, but upon the guard's awakening, he told them that he had seen a white lady wandering the corridor searching, who turned and charged him upon seeing him. He, ghostly white, told those who had revived him that he had fainted, but quickly their concern transitioned from him onto the king. Relief was found when the king responded to the knocks upon the door, appearing fine and well. But a day later, the king could not rise from his bed, for he was struck with a fever. For 6 days, the royal household worried over him. The news of the apparition had spread, and a great fear had descended. On the 7th day of the fever, the great monarch slipped from life and into death, believed to be the last victim of Anna Sidow's revenge. It was not, although, her last appearance. On the 26th of May, 1940, her figure was seen wandering the halls of the Stadtschloss that had been empty of its Hohenzollern inhabitants since the revolution of 1918 and had since become a museum. She wandered and wandered, looking for the residents but found none. For her final quarry, she would have to search farther afield. Over the countryside of Prussia she flew, farther and farther away from lands that she had known and over territory foreign. Eventually she paused at the burning town of Valenciennes in northern France. Soon she turned toward Belgium, moving with haste northwest, only stopping when the great stone wall of the Romanesque church at Nivelles rose before her, of which only the walls stood. The town, like Valenciennes, was a smouldering ruin, which she searched until she found her quarry. Into a field of tents, where great green machines stood with circles of white and crosses of red emblazoned upon their sides. She moved amongst the moans and screams of soldiers until she found the one she wanted. He was laid on a cot like many others. Dressed in bandages stained red, his body was battered and broken. His brow wrinkled from a natural stern gaze that was replaced at this moment with a pained horror. A shredded jacket lay over his chest, the double piping and single golden gilt pip informing those around him that here lay an Oberleutnant. But to Anna Sidow, who had traveled so far, here lay Wilhelm von Preußen, eldest son of Crown Prince Wilhelm, last Crown Prince of the Hohenzollern dynasty, wounded in battle. She sat before the man, this Wilhelm von Preußen, who had given up his hereditary right to the defunct throne in marrying a woman of lower standing whom he loved, who was now in great pain. She leaned forward and in a gentle touch helped the man who had broken the line of Hohenzollern for love from his mortal suffering. Since that day, the white lady, Anna Sidow, has not been seen again. Although other tragedies have befallen the House of Hohenzollern, she, herself, has not been witnessed. But the Schloss in which she once wandered was damaged in the war and cleared in 1950. But that Schloss now has risen from the ground once more and will be soon open for the public to wander. So the question is, will it now be long till Anna Sidow is seen wandering the halls once more? Thank you for listening to the Artung History Podcast, written and presented by myself, Simon J. James, and produced by theberlintourguide.com. This week, The Haunting of House Hohenzollern.
If you wish to find out more about the podcast, visit the website at theberlintourguide.com/Artum History. Follow on Facebook at Artum History or on Twitter and Instagram also at Artum History. If you wish to support the Artum History podcast, you can do so through Patreon at patreon.com/Artum History. Becoming a Patreon member means exclusive access to our new podcast notes episodes. In these new episodes, you will understand all of the other research that went on that couldn't quite make it into the episode. So join our Patreon today. Thank you for listening to Artum History.